Sheila Carter Jones has spent many years in the field of education and is currently an education consultant and a full-time poet. She's a fellow of both the Western Pennsylvania Writing Project and Cave Canem. Her work has appeared in several anthologies and journals, including Crossing Limits, which is a wonderful anthology, Pennsylvania Review, Tri-State Anthology, and others. Her chapbook, Blackberry Cobbler Song, was recently released by Published Today, and she has a new book that has been selected by Elizabeth Alexander. The name of the book is Three Birds Deep, and it is going to be published by Lotus Press, and we are really thrilled about this. Yay! Please give it up for Sheila Carter Jones. This is very exciting.
I'm not going to sit down. I hope you don't mind. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. I have a little order to my madness, but I don't know if it will last. So I thought I would start with a little couple of poems from my little chapbook. They're both kind of in honor of my parents. And particularly the first one is for my mom and all the women from my hometown who did domestic work. So it's kind of like a prayer that I do. It kind of settles me down up here and kind of gets me kind of situated and breathing right. So this first poem is called Tired and Going Home. I can see her as I have seen them all, drooped like a wet rag, turned in tight twist, smooth, then hung out to dry, will be used again. Her skin is the deep olive brown mud of the creek, where waters run slow like tired perspiration, rounding down stone stern cheeks. I see her as I have seen them all, lift brown faces to hot blue skies that burn away the day of scrubbing the rich lady's house, never complaining of working too hard, keeping two homes in just one day, for she's a righteous woman padding a coal miner's pay. I see her, eyes closed in humble ceremony, praying for the day when aching bones simply mean growing old. And in her prayer, I hear a near silent song, rising up in many tongues, singing from down deep rhythms about going home. I hear her echo as I have heard all the echoes of yellow, brown, black women, women, yellow, brown, brown, black, blue, black women. I hear them say, someday I'm going down home. Home I thought was Virginia or Alabama, maybe Carolina, Louisiana. But when I see the mud in their skin, Georgia's red dust, I know to the earth they all must return to be used again. I think I lost my other one. Oh, here it is. This is for my dad. He's a coal miner. So this one is called Mad Dog Wind. I keep hearing that mad dog wind howl through the valley, scratch at windows of company store houses, and rattle bone chimes long empty of marrow. It is the sound of my father's bedridden beg for air, the sanctified preacher's mouth full of prayer. It must have been the way the wind's cool, wet hands bent the screen door back until it creaked like lungs pressed against 40 years of December ice. A boxcar full of storm is headed this way, with some old hooded coal miner hanging on with arms wrapped around its slick neck and riding low. This wild nostril-flaring animal hugs the rail close and stirs coal dust over air sacs wrought with black disease. It must have been the way the wind rattled the screen door that makes me hear my father's cough, a slow draw in, then out, the tired breath, his steady release of the pick and shovel life, a handover of reins to a machine that lends a steady push, pull, to air into cavities being eaten by the creeping darkness of the coal mines. And funny how it all begins to come back to me, the signs that crawled unnoticed in and out of my father's aluminum lunch pail, his gray work pants, the hard hat, boots scuffed and slashed with bituminous cuts, scars that proved the skin of pain was never easy. And funny, until now, I hadn't noticed that my father had grown old, not even when months before he asked to buy him a cane. Hadn't noticed the knee of his right leg could hardly bend up the back steps. Just saw the smile he worked his face so hard to make.
Oh, there it is right there.
Sorry. This one is in honor of the Pablo Neruda birthday celebration. This is a poem fashioned after one of his poems. I can't quite remember which one, though. Sorry about that. It's called I'd Like for You to Sit Near. I'd like for you to sit near, like the distance between my echo and Paris. I still taste the comfort of bonbon on my tongue. Like spring, your eyes fill the hungry mouths of cherry blossoms with pink. Like small birds, let me fly with you into the earth, dusted over with bronze rouge. I'd like for you to sit near, like the wind blowing in circles. It feels as though you are swirling deep in my belly, like a starling caught in the eye. You are me inside myself, like lips that blossom in sweet rain. I feel your hands reach like branches, and words are tangled in leaves. As all of the sky is spacious inside my heart, you come from the sky filled with my heart. You are like my heart, a dash of red thought, and you are like the concept Veritas Vermilion. Come sit near. I like for you to sit near, and you seem to be meandering. It sounds like the creek murmuring of drunken love. You are thick vintage blood down my throat, like the wisteria climbing pine. I cling to the passing flavor of you, you who are me inside myself. I like for you to sit near, like the lump in my throat. Your silence is my face pressed against the dark night, like the moon sinking. Our words dig beneath the stone, and the slender-necked violet bends in sorrow as the barely audible sound of my pulse high tides inside my ear. I like for you to sit near, and you seem to have gone far, far away. It feels as though I can touch your distance that is close as my breath. I tilt my mouth up like a window wide open in summer, and the sun is yes, yes, not no. Come sit near. You guys clap too much. And then I had this idea of when I would try to change themes, I would read these little short things that I've overheard people say. And this first one is The Linguist on the English language. The Oriental guy, he spoke perfect English, must be American born. His daughter, also Oriental, English speaking, blah, 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 blah. And most are inherently racist. These next few are drafts. I just want to do them. And they're from the Mad Women in the Attic with a little chorus I kind of do with Stacey Waite. These are some of the poems coming out of there this summer. The first one is called Baby Leg. She comes rolling in her wheelchair, elbows bent like chicken wings, hands gripped on the wheels, and I bet she flies in her dreams. Doesn't have to think about lifting one leg in front of the left one that is not there. The right leg is a baby leg, new flesh with bare foot curled just a little, like it got caught in some other space-time and stayed there. She spins spokes in straight line purpose, appointment with free weights, strength of upper body muscles. She doesn't look at me even when I say hello. I don't know if she really doesn't see me or doesn't want me to see her baby leg in the empty space leg that is not empty at all. I imagine this woman into a world of a man I know, who decided, only he knows why, before becoming form, before flesh, to enter a body with the left arm like her right leg, short and paralytic, of no use but to stir thoughts. and she does not know, not yet conscious of why, she too wanted this. Some of her life energy compressed into one baby leg with no growth cycle, in the other leg, a figment. This unknowing presses her self-conscious against me. My stomach pushes back. Pressure of our masses insists in a space of time kept as seed. I reach. No, I have promised to open the door here at this moment of influence. But her woman hand is quick on the knob. This is another draft called Ghost Deer. Driving up Milroy Hill, no lantern streetlights, but the scent of animal pulls me like lodestone on amber to what glows in the dark. I lean my head out the window into wind of nostrils, a white deer so close its warm breath is wet on my face. It stares into me with slippery eyes, weightless as ghost. He haunts like blessed thistle rubbed raw in pink twilight. His wild tongue gamey as venison in the mouth. I taste the smell of honeysuckle. The meat is tender under teeth. It makes me sleep in my sleep. In a dream, within a dream, I am on Mount Shuyang, veiled in lace and voile, eating green of ferns, swallowing innocent seed of acorn fruit. A white deer comes, offers its milk to me. The milk is so sweet, I want to taste its meat, the sure footing of each impermanent hoof as it disappears down my throat. Another short. Two men on women. It's a short. I've overheard this. Black widow? Ever see one? They have that red octagon. I see them every day downtown. Those motherfuckers will eat you alive. From the inside out, they'll eat you, leave the shell. The female eats the male, same as the praying mantis. I don't know how true any of that is, but I'm changing themes. This is about my mother at the end of her days. This one, our first one, is called Hatch. At first, I think it's a robin's egg, fallen too far from the nest. But it's a small rock, hard and unforgiving in its density, like my mother's mind, a winding disc, stuck in a groove, calling my sister-in-law's name. Come here, Barbara, she says. And by that name, I go to her, become flesh and blood of coagulated memories, crammed bumper to bumper in thought jams. I turn this rock round, feel smooth, lacerated lumps of tar worn against granite shell. See that not even this rock is exempt from scarred skin, and fleshy tones give possibility of a bird inside a shell. Like my mother, who will become beak and feathers, fly from the gray matter, and suddenly a surge of oxygen in my brain makes me jerk, afraid the rock will hatch in my hand too soon. And clear liquid will ooze without form, without voice. I will touch the primordial slime, cling to my mother's bones, become and take on her form. I will smell it, take it in on the swell of lungs, wrap myself in fresh-born warmth, fledgling breath, an instinct sure my mother will accept to her own beak, see with beady eyes a way out of her shell of immense dark, leave this nettle nest world. This is another draft. As you can see, it's a draft. It's a real bad draft. But anyways, last secret. When my mother pulled the hospital gown past her naked breast, I felt embarrassed for her body. It wasn't that she had grown so thin that shoulder blades curled in. It is what I remember her saying. Your daddy has never seen me naked. It makes it more exciting. And here she is with this strange doctor leaning over what my dad had rarely seen in over 50 years. Some days she would look at me, call my sister-in-law's name, and I would try not to go to her. Barbara was such a cold buttress that my mother always welcomed and made me decide to show respect. Aren't you going to speak to Barbara? She's sitting in there. And here she is calling me that cold, with a voice so soft it could be a small squirrel falling to new snow. I sat with my mother many days after she could not recall my name, who I was, but she trusted my touch. Her own mother hands reaching to comfort a small girl with splinters after the dig of needle into skin. Be still now before that sliver goes to your heart and you'll be dead. And here she is, my child, opening her mouth slightly for the spoon that glides over gums to tongue. On the day her breath went away, there were no big tears. It was how she wanted it to end. Me eating home-cooked chicken livers on a paper plate in a corner of the hospital room with no family pictures. And here is my mother in final beauty sleep, and me crawling beside her to whisper in her ear how much better the livers would have been with her rice. The Housing Authority on mice and men. Fuck it, they have to live too. They're not going to bother you. They come with a house. I wondered when they were going to show up. This next switch over. Helmet Head. In the driveway, a grasshopper hops the hood, clings as an ornament while I ride the passenger seat, shotgun, wild woman throwing peyote dust, turning my car into a cluster of white palomino, clomping to powwow in the high desert. My father, on the day of his funeral, changed into a white bird, a seagull. He had never been to the edge, never too far past sulfur brown in the creek, but I had once seen what could have been a gull gliding above the Allegheny River, out of place in the gray over Pittsburgh. It is the same coughed up sky I saw when my father's red-brown skin stretched death ash after living in coal mines, shaping dirtscapes for rich people, boulders, manure, bulbs, stinking possibilities buried in hardened feces like Cape Castle walls made of human excrement. Millions of hearts embedded there still pulse like mine does now as I lean, my body half out the window, screaming a fist at the grasshopper. It hugs the hood with all 6 feet, madman with helmet head bent to the wind, wings pressed against abdomen, protect the singing heart inside segmented armor shell. No need to flick it for choice of song. Force of wind will knock the helmet off as we gain speed. It will tumble backward, splatter on the windshield, become a dot. Then, interestingly enough, all the way from New Mexico to the Squirrel Hill Giant Eagle, I walked in and saw a grasshopper on some collard greens. Nobody saw it but me. No, it was quite a tizzy because I just thought everybody could see this grasshopper. It actually was real. It wasn't a premise. I wasn't tripping. Helmet Head's episode. I see it first thing, a grasshopper stiff as twig in the produce section. So still it could be hand painted on collard leaves, a blend of khaki skin on Hooker's green canvas, camouflaged in war gear, nearly invisible in Veritas Verdant, the six-legged soldier, statued in silent psychotic dilemma. I detect a rattle of instinct in insect brain, hexagonal lens take in leaf and stalk, chopped, bunched, tied like POWs march to urban jungle camp, where green syllables slice thorax spine and segmented bodies tumble, fraught with variations of ferret. I have been this way, mandibles rigid, head woodsy dense in thoughts, overgrown with foliage and shrubs, hands clutch to variegated possibilities, afraid to take the leap. Grasshopper eyes scrutinize a Rorschach greengrocer test, fixated to find familiar algorithms among variables of greens, broccoli, politics, and chive. Three of five eyes sense light and dark, splat of green, splotch of people, the calculations systematic. I've been located by radar signal, received the SOS, and I confess. I am linked by instinct to fear of finger pinch. In tableaus of darker greens, I have been unseen, against hues of market chaos, out of place among. Wearing skin of herringbone patterns fashion, over brown veins fine as any membranous suit of wings, I know what this field hopper feels, the way foot soldiers probe for landmines that scatter the brains. It understands, dare not move in this space of shared food. Its waxy eco-helmet, no iron armor against marchand de legumes, guarded by grunt of human carnivore, prod of hands that force grasshopper ganglia to hypothesize, quickness of six legs leaping, the faith of one helmet head catapulting to flight. This is just one thrown in. This is Starry Night is Eden's Snake. I am drunk on poppy seed, desert blue peyote, and I ride my blue zebra with rattlesnake eyes that stare into a starry night over the Rhone. Only in my dream do I know this blue white-striped Z is a horse with chestnut skin, the color of my dining room buffet. La nuit étoilée is a deep blue bicep that muscles concentric stars through blue brick night, lays light in spasms of patterns that shiver like a near-dead flock of blue hues that belly crawl to shore. Only in my dream do I know the blue-boobed bee is a brothel bitch who guards carefully a left earlobe wrapped in newspaper, without detail about how the war must go on, how Diane's two hands learn to knit to make something to hold now that her son is dead. I paddle the boat of this post-impression trip, glimpse bold blue before a taste of turpentine, turns me crystal soothsayer who yanks oars of brain lesions like caught carp thrash from the lip. Only in my dream do I know this hiss blue S is an Eden snake with two blue tongues. One explains the blue dreams. One explains the blue dreams. One more after this. This is the social worker on the homeless. Street life. You know how the streets do you. Beat you up. Make you strange. Or maybe I'll read the last one. I'll read one about my brother who was in Vietnam, and then I'll just read one that some people think makes no sense at all, although it makes perfect sense to me. So this second to the last one is called Beekeeper. Beekeeper. Alone with three legs reaching, a yellow jacket lay like a virgin in the grave, curled on cool basement cement, stiff in the dead dream. It would have been easy to kick it away, toe to head, how it should be, if it had not awakened my brother in me. He crouched, still at war, wounded flesh unhealed from elbow to phalanges, his writing hand cupped blood, southpaw unlucky in love. How did this soldier bee fly down rice paddy laundry chute into knickknacks, hunks of chairs piled high, one on top of 2, 3, and 25, hexagonal cells reconfigured, this mass of wood is a bone hive of mangled bodies thrown in a stack of unidentified honeycombs. Trees full of slant-eyed chom chom grow their white Viet meat transparent as wafer wings my brother used when he flew into me sideways. The body he left behind, full of thick skin for ceremony to ashes. The gray-brown dust I keep on the tongue stings my eyes. Then the last one that makes no sense at all to some people, but makes perfect sense to me, called No Sound Pounds. No sound pounds the eardrum of those who sleep too late. I talk and laugh talk all night, like young American, English Bowie, and African Naomi, do the daddy long leg strut, knees pumped high, then four stiff legs fast stomp down, a heart spike in the chest kills me dead as the day my mother decided to die. No sound pounds the eardrum of those who sleep too late, like pre-babies born dead as chili beans in a tin can, caught in thickness of sauce blood, processed to last 9 months, barring no interplanetary juxta movement when the moon flips into the eighth house. No sound pounds the eardrum of those who sleep too late, like the no-babes of infertility, who never come a-knocking at the door of no dreams, and neither do they phone home with no sound that pounds down the door of those who snore too loud in the dead dream. Thank you. Thank you.